drilling foreman, a U.S. Geologic Survey representative, a man from the California Department of Oil and Gas, and a couple of mud men and rednecks. "We're going to shut the well in," said the Texaco man. "This was very risky. All drilling rigs have blowout preventers which crush the casing so that nothing can escape. The danger is that the oil and gas can find its way up around the outside of the casing and thus become totally uncontrollable. The men on the rig felt they had no choice and the well was shut in. At that instant, there was a powerful earthquake which rocked the rig so violently that it very nearly fell into the sea. The well had been closed to a fault, and the tremendous gas pressure was enough to jar the fault and make it slip, once the pressure was increased by shutting in the well." My friend continues, "A few days after the Northridge earthquake, I received a call from a man who is a lieutenant general in the Army. He is sympathetic to the nationalist cause. 'How did you fare in the earthquake?' he asked. I answered that we were unhurt, but that our house was severely damaged. 'You realize, of course, that the earthquake was caused by the detonation of many nukes underground.' I didn't know what to say. 'Have you ever heard,' he asked, 'of an earthquake in which the earth jumps up 12 feet and falls back again? Wells were drilled down to faults and bombs were placed there. This was a test.'" And as an aside, I would just say to any Contact and Liberator readers, you should already know this. Back to the story here. "A couple of days later, I called him and said that I intended to write about what he told me. 'I wouldn't do that,' he advised. 'Could he tell me anything else about it?' 'No, but I'll tell you this, it's not over. These mini nukes have been placed in all the major faults in California.'" And I'll just put an aside here. Commander told us this at least 3 or 4 years ago. Back to the story here. "FEMA will explode them one by one." "What's the point?" I asked. "Well, FEMA will use these emergencies to regionalize this country and set up martial law. Everyone south of the Columbia River is in danger." On 26 January, the Los Angeles Times reported, quote, "The Northridge earthquake pummeled large parts of Los Angeles with two distinct pulses of energy, the second and stronger of which may have accounted for some of the unexpected violent shaking on the west side," scientists said Tuesday, end of quote. And then the author here has three dots, and then he says, "Maybe they did use two bombs. I've always said they should drop a bomb on Los Angeles, but I didn't think I'd be here when it happened." Ironically, the earthquake occurred along an obscure line known as the Oak Ridge Fault. Oak Ridge, Tennessee was where J. Robert Oppenheimer and his co-religionists created the atom bomb. Editor's note, my friend no longer lives in California. Now that's the end of the intelligence report, but I'm just reminded of something else. I'm hearing Gordon Michael Scallion's recently released September newsletter. He's been very shy about mentioning the magnitude of the Northridge quake, and he's stuck with the official numbers, but I have a feeling a number of our contact readers have pummeled him with our information, because just in this September issue, he has said that he has said that the so-called 6.8 quake, or he's phrased it in such a way that it is now an official number but not necessarily the correct one. And then in parentheses, he goes so far as to say some of the instruments down in the Los Angeles area recorded a magnitude of 9.2. So I'm happy to see him beginning to be a little more daring and getting to the truth. Now, I have an item here from Cali that I've been saving for a while that I wouldn't, I've been, well, it has, it's not an earthquake report. It is something that maybe I would share with all of us here and our tape people, because she was sitting out one evening looking up at the stars and came running in to write this, and it segues into what we're going to get into with saving the country, as well as many of us who are ground crew and have asked these same questions to Commander, who can probably verify this. But it's not a long piece, and I will just share it with you. It's called Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And she says, "I sit in wonder as I look into the nighttime sky and view all the splendor and magnificence. In the air, there is the first hint of the change of the seasons, and soon the hot and sunny days will be gone, and in their place, crisp, cool mornings and nights and the beauty of the wintertime skies. Pleiades is becoming visible once again after their summer vacation, and as I look heavenward, they are like sparkling sapphires that stand out in the night sky. They are as old friends, returned again for their short seasonal visit, and I greet them warmly and long to again return home. Then, gazing upon the strobing ships, a childhood memory of many days long past comes into view, and I recite the rhyme once more. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder where you are, up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky. It still carries with it a magical tone of wonderment, but now even more so, for I truly do wonder where they might be and what they might be seeing from their vantage point, way up there among the stars and planets. Is there more peace and love and contentment there? I certainly hope so. All the beauty of the sky at night, such splendor to behold, and I wonder how was it all brought forth from nothingness. And I hear that by thoughts of love, a love so great that it could not be contained, and it exploded outward, ever growing, ever expanding. And then I begin to realize that I am a part of that expansion, of that love so great that it could not be contained, and that within me is a fragment of that same love and the same thoughts which brought all of this forth. And if I be a part of the whole, then I too must have the same ability to be filled in such an overflowing that I could not contain it, and that I too would have to release it and send it on its way, allowing it to ever grow and expand. So then, if that be the case, why do I sit here waiting for my ship to come in? Why do I not go out there and find that ship? What's stopping me? Who can stop a thought of love so great? The answer? Only me. Only me. I am the only one standing in my own way, because out of fear and unbelief, I stand still, waiting, waiting, waiting. But what if Columbus had waited because he was afraid? Or if Emmanuel had run the other way because he was fearful? Or what if Thomas Jefferson had doubted his beliefs? What did these possess that I do not? Were they any more a part of the whole than I? What made these ones so great? Could it be courage? And where does courage come from? How do I get some? What makes one man develop it and not another? Is there some magical formula that I just don't know about? Where did they find it? Was it there all the time, waiting for them to call upon it? Is it within me, waiting, waiting, waiting? Perhaps great men aren't born courageous. Perhaps they become courageous simply because they have a passion so great, a love thought so great, that it cannot be contained within them, and it explodes forth, growing and expanding. Is that how it all is in this universe? Do we lack the passion of men of days gone by? Or have we taken passion and turned it into a lust for the physical pleasures, and have we forgotten what life is really all about and why we are here? Have we been seduced, just as those in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah were, seduced by the physical lusts? And if that be the case, then what is our destiny? What is our legacy? Are we destined for the same end, the same judgment as were those two cities? What an utter waste of the magnificence of the civilization it could be. So I have to ask myself whether I shall stand proud before the Almighty for the part I have played, or shall I hang my head in shame? Will I be told, "Well done, my good and faithful servant," or shall I hear, "Go to the left, for I knew you not"? I must ask myself with each thought I think, each word I speak, each thing that I do, am I benefiting civilization or am I benefiting anti-civilization? There is so much of my past that I am not proud of, but yet the Creator still continues to bestow blessing after blessing upon me, even when I feel the most unworthy. And if that is not love, then I do not know what is. To whom much is given, much is required. With this knowledge, no longer am I able to sit back and wait for another to do it. For I am responsible for all that I have thought, all that I have spoken, and all that I have done. I and I alone shall be held accountable for my life, and no one else. And if I err, then I must have the courage to admit the error. And if I should hurt another, then I must have the courage to ask their forgiveness. And above all, I must have the courage to stand up for that which I believe in and allow the passion to grow beyond the containment, regardless of the ridicule that will come. Then and only then will I truly be able to say that I am a part of the overall plan of creation and that I have played my role to the best of my ability and will be able to stand before the Creator with my head up and hear the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." It is amazing the thoughts that come when we simply get quiet for a few moments and put aside all the worries and cares of our lives and sit cross-legged beneath a starry sky and sing, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star." Signed, Kelly.
You're not by yourself, are you? But that's why it takes a while. Because each of you as fragments coming together finally to make an effort to reclaim stability in your physical expression had to first hear, recognize the talent or the gift, respond to it, move through the discipline, and Callie had to do that. And doing it from a distance. And when I say distance, it is because ones want to think of the nucleus as being where they first received from here came the word, and I heard the word and I thought it came from there. Well, you see, Soltec is never away because she has been asked to be that receiver so that we could have a direct and immediate communication system. You'll need instructions as you move along, and from out in the universal cosmos, you don't have a problem with distance simply because there is none. That is a perception that you will have to just confront and accept until you can understand it. So there is no nucleus over there. You have little pods, little gardens, if you will, where you can plant these seeds. So I thank Callie for bearing with us. She had some bad times and she didn't want to write. And I'm responsible for that. But also, I am responsible for the nurturing. And she didn't fold. She paused a little bit, but she didn't fold. And that's what's required. You must not fold. You get the truth, you clear your space, and then you move. And when you accept that banner or that responsibility, others will move with you. And then you quiver and shake. But what if I'm wrong? Well, they are responsible for their own thought processes. That is a dictatorship, and that's what you are trying to get away from. And that does bring us right back into what it is you may be trying to do here. And is it worthy of your trying to do it when you know you've got United Nations and alien troops in your very own land and they're going to loose the little grays on you to scare you a little bit more? What else are you going to do Are you going to be immobilized in your fear? Or are you going back and study how you came to be a republic in the beginning? And we're going to start this very little conversation, because I preached this a couple of days ago, and I hope that when you get those writings, you study them well over and over and over again. If you do not know what it is you're headed for or want, how in the world can you get there? You are lied to. You are told we must go over here to help this one establish its democracy. We are going to fight everybody and bomb them if necessary for human rights and the right of a democracy to succeed. Democracy is a mockery. It destines everyone involved to failure. It is mob rule. Mob rule. And anymore, you cannot even have a fair election. You can computerize the system, and it comes out exactly like the elite wants it every time. You are a manipulated society. You've been bought off. All of those ones content to be on the welfare system and receive are not going to vote against that system. And if you are outnumbered as one who works, guess what? The Treasury will rule. You were established as a republic. Your founding fathers understood and knew it had to be a republic, never, never a democracy. You needed to run your republic democratically. So what is the difference? So ones in the little circles have had quite an interesting little opportunity to confer. How many of you in here now know what is truly, what is the definition of a republic, and what is democracy? Democracy is obviously ruled by the mob, the majority. So let's all just consider for a minute Ed Cleary. Let's handle this as a democracy instead of a republic. Everybody in favor of breaking both of Ed's knees, raise your hand. Well, I would guess that Ed may be the one to object.
He raised his hand.
So be it.
Well, he's just confused. It's been a hard 4 weeks for him. But isn't that what you do to yourselves? You vote yourselves, get both your legs broken. Beats anything I've ever seen. I guess you want free health insurance. If you were under a republic, there would be no question. It is unlawful to go break his legs. I don't care who you are. It is unlawful for E.J. to go break his legs. It is unlawful for Bill Clinton to go break his legs. And that is what a republic is, established on a set of constitutional laws, equally enforced, equally adhered to, equally binding on all citizens, from the higher level to the lowest level. The laws are carefully constructed, and they are equal. All ones fall to the rule of the law. You must remember it. It's covered in your Constitution and your Bill of Rights. And when ones come and say, oh, but the Indians were, come off it. Yes, they were, but it's because you turned to a democracy and you left your republic. Under the law, the Indians have equal or superior rights, as a matter of fact. They fall into a category of having their own nation under their law, and they are citizens of the United States of America. Should be treated fair and equal. That is not what happened. That is what you must reclaim. Your republic under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. How do you do it? Very persistently and very carefully. I understand the need for you to write refounding amendments, because there is much confusion as to how in the world you go back to reclaim. And now all these foreign troops over here complicates it. But I would cut off all this garbage over here on the side and tell you right now, there are enough liens. Your country went bankrupt in 1933, and you've never been solvent since. You've just gone farther and farther and farther into the hole. And they, being the banksters and everyone, are trying to foreclose on you. Well, why don't you foreclose on this rotten mess first? There are plenty of claims against the Treasury that cannot be paid. And yet we've seen to it that enough gold has been shipped back into your nation to make a fundamental gold standard so that you have backing for any currency, and it will again come out of the government and not the Federal Reserve. And what's sacred about Washington, D.C.? It is the blackest, most filthy place, morally, of any place. What in the world would you want with it? Why would you take your militias up there and fight over it? If you want to do that, do it. I suggest you foreclose on it and let it fold up. But do you think they're going to just roll over and play dead while you do this? No. On the other hand, the more elite who understand what is coming down here may see the benefit in helping you. It isn't going to do you a whole heck of a lot of good to replace 3 or 4 or 10 senators. Every bit helps. But they're right there to be corrupted. And if they have made it all the way through politics to get to that point, believe me, there is blackmail capability. You've got to go back to your sovereignty of your states, your citizens, and your little townships. It starts at home. They're not going to make it easy for you, and these gentlemen are going to tell you a few things in a little bit. I want, please, for Bob to tell you what happened over the meeting. I was basically urging that Mark from Michigan not come to the meeting because there had just been an uprising and ADL members were arrested. These are the Mishpuka. Believe me, that is a mispronunciation. This is your Khazarian Zionist crime family. They surpass any crime family ever known. They are enforced by the Mossad. They are relentless, and they're behind the Simpson murder so that they can start riots. And you can see it building every day, every day. Do not just run through Gary Ween's material rapidly. Go back and read it and reread it. And a group from the ADL and the World Zionist Organization came down and picketed a meeting that they had in Bakersfield through a Christian resource called Jubilee. I'm going to ask you ones to be very careful how you handle contact. Rick was just petitioned by ones who thoroughly enjoy the magazine, have not been reading it very long, but are infatuated with it, and they want us to write a pamphlet explaining who Commander is. No! Why would you do that? All you need is truth. And circumstance. Never mind these other things. And if anyone asks you, who in the soup is that one? He's a journalist. An investigative reporter is a good one. A compiler of research material. Ghost Rider. Dharma's Ghost Rider.
Oh.
Don't make it harder for yourselves. You've got to do this on a purely physical plane. And you'll get some spiritual help. But that's all you'll get. At least for now. So I rather nudged and urged Bob to not jeopardize Mark's position. He was coming into the same town, and they're after him already, and it becomes more and more dangerous. And then Bob and EJ were talking, and it was suggested maybe we'll call the police, the sheriff's department, and see what's what before we completely cancel it. Because he was to speak in another place also. And I'd like Bob to tell you what happened. It'll do your heart good. And these are the things you need to know, because you've got to move into and understand the 10th Amendment as a republic. So, gentlemen, I would like to please turn it over to you. They both claim to not want to speak. You know, well, they better get used to it.
Well, basically what happened was we were seriously considering calling the meeting off because of possible federal intervention. They had just assigned 10 ATF agents to both Kern County, and five in Kern County and five in Fresno County. And they were to monitor the meeting that we had down at the hotels a couple of weeks ago. We got worried about it, so I took literature and material into the sheriff's department and sat down and talked with them. And come to find out, they're very worried about their status also, and realize the tremendous amount of federal intervention coming into the county via law enforcement. And they reassured me that there would be plenty of plain clothes sheriffs there, plus also patrols on the outside to make sure nothing happened. And that's exactly what took place, and nothing did happen.
So, are you going to re-record on the first side?
Okay, thanks, Bob.
And we had a meeting with some of the Kern County Board of Supervisors to explore the possibility of them passing a resolution to basically support the Sheriff's Department and have the citizens of Kern County also support the Sheriff's Department so that they can again start to reestablish their constitutional authority, which is basically the sheriff of every county of this nation is the highest law enforcement agency of the nation, not the federal government. And so this is what we've got to try to reinstitute. We got mixed reaction out of the board. And I think the most frightening thing about it was of the people we met with is their lack of understanding of the law itself. They don't realize the power that they have, and they can control if they will just exercise that power, and especially through the grand jury. And we left literature there, and they're studying it, and we will be getting back with them in the near future. I think we'll have another meeting probably later in October to investigate and carry this thought a little further. Out of that, we also have made arrangements now to bring Mark back, Mark from Michigan, back to Kern County on October the 8th. And to that end, we have now rented the Civic Auditorium in Bakersfield, and the drive will be to get all law enforcement officers, both the police and Kern County, plus all the military officers, and this includes military officers on the around Mojave and Edwards and any place we can get them. Also, we're going to target try to get military officers off of Vandenberg Air Force Base. And starting tomorrow, we will have about 20 to 25,000 brochures printed for the purpose of achieving this. So to that end, we need each and every one of you to participate in this and getting brochures out to anybody and everybody you can. Because I think this could be a major, major meeting for Kern County, and it looks like we may be the central point in California in spreading this both directions. So the drive to get the sheriffs involved and is not just happening in Kern County, it's happening throughout the nation now. And it's very prolific in Florida. It's taking place in Montana, the Dakotas, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, and now in California. And if we can get the 3,200 counties of this nation to understand the law and to protect the people from the federal government, we will have made a major stride in turning the New World Order around. So that's where we stand, and that's what we hope is going to happen.
Now, would you please briefly explain what is the 10th Amendment? And what is happening, because you've done a beautiful job, and I wish sincerely to congratulate you. There have been several of you out front in this and have done a very, very good job, and I would ask that you be prepared. When we do get Ron out and we start moving, you'll be called on, you specifically.
Thank you, Commander. First off, I'd like to bring warm aloha and greetings from Hawaii from my wife and Dr. Paul Kenyon and myself. And actually, if we did anything, it was by the hand of God and the gift that you all provided for us through the contact, because that's actually how this initiative came about that we worked with, called the 10th Amendment Resolution, because it was initially the ultimatum resolution, which, as you remember, was in one of the contact issues about a year or so ago from Joseph Stump up in Utah. He presented this ultimatum resolution, basically, that spoke to the issue of the usurpation of our rights as a republic, and it spoke to the hearts of our core group in Hawaii. And so we took that on. And out of that, we worked for about a year prior to the entrance of this issue called the 10th Amendment Resolution, which we were not really much aware of. I was a little bit myself when I, having researched and read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Federalist Papers, but I wasn't aware of the power of that one statement. And the resistance we had when we presented the ultimatum resolution was clear, because the first time we met with one of our legislative compadres, Senator Tony Chang, he simply said, as he had rewritten the ultimatum resolution, calls for the dissolution of the United States of America. And that's not what we wanted. That's not what the initiative was about. It was literally about putting government into alignment with the Constitution. But the document, the ultimatum resolution, didn't do that. It didn't speak to that issue. It just simply said that if these three things happen, we are going to fire the federal government and take back the rights, which is truly our power, but it didn't get at the issue of what was the key that did do that. We read in the contact the proposed or the 10th Amendment resolution by Representative Duke from Colorado. We clipped that out. Doc Kenyon had it enlarged. And one night he delivered it to a friend that delivered it to that senator that had written the first draft that called for the dissolution of the American government. That's the way people heard it. Just so happened that the next day we had a big article in the newspaper that called, that brought up the issue of unfunded federal mandates. This was on a Friday. Thursday night, Dr. Kenyon brought that document called the 10th Amendment resolution to the senator who was kind of honchoing this for on our behalf. We built this coalition nicely. We didn't make any enemies. We made friends. We were about, that's, and this is an aside, we really tried to not make enemies in that regard. We didn't approach it like we were smarter than or better than them and that they must do our bidding and stuff like that. We really worked at the issue of enrolling or speaking such that they we could listen to what they were hearing we were saying, so to speak. Going back to the timing of this, we brought the document, which was a printout from the page of editorial page on Friday morning that talked about the unfunded federal mandates, by George Will and our governor. They just happened, you know, just accidentally happened to be in the same editorial page, and they just appeared right together.
Son of a gun.
And Brian Mowry, who's one of our compadres, also was in my office, and I looked at this and I said, gee, we should get this printed and immediately take it down to the legislature. Fortunately, in Honolulu, our legislature is in Honolulu and not in some distant place. And we ran it down and we had it circulated. Well, the next Tuesday evening, we had, April 2nd, I believe it was, we had the first hearing on our resolution, or on the resolution called the ultimatum resolution. But this thing had been totally changed, and it's to call for the preservation of the Republic and the Constitution for the United States of America. And it had in about all these unfunded federal mandates, and the governor knew that it would cost $377 million next year if we had to comply with that. And then it had something about the 10th Amendment, and the next thing you know, it had this real powerful, be it resolved that the federal government, any laws or unfunded mandates are prohibited. Well, when on our first evening meeting or our first testimony, we had about 35 people there that had written testimony on behalf of the resolution. And in that, they recognized that the people were here speaking something that they had the authority to speak on. And we had literally, in the 10th Amendment, as you remember, it says all those powers not conferred by the Constitution to the federal government, nor prohibited to it by the states, are reserved to the people. Some year or two or three before that time, we had come across this law of agency, which basically says that God created the universe and natural law and then man, and man was superior to all government, basically. And from that, we saw the wisdom of the 10th Amendment, which they asked us, these are the senators asking us, well, would you be satisfied with this? And we said, well, yeah, just kind of forcing it on us a little bit here, but no, we were more than pleased to see this thing that they had done, because it was really the hand of God that was providing us the guidance and all, but we did have to make the effort, which we did. And it, from that point forth, just it was step by step by step, except that there were people against it, but basically it had been designed. I say, you know, we did what we needed to do, which is go to the meetings and do the typing and make the connections and be willing to be foolish enough to stand up in front of a legislator and say something that we thought was superior to his understanding of something. But we were all willing to do that, and it was successfully passed on May 2nd. So that's all. I really don't. I think now that meeting here, our initiative here is one to connect with y'all, because you really formulate, this is an acknowledgement, the basis by which we communicate with information that we're not privy to in Honolulu through the contact. And we're looking, after we successfully passed the 10th Amendment resolution, we looked at next, what do we need to do? And of course, we've been not floundering, we've been simply getting guidance, bits and pieces of information. We're familiar with the refounding amendment. All of a sudden, Mr. Jackson comes in, calls for the parallel government, which was consistent with what the commander had mentioned some long time ago. And then exploring among ourselves the possibility of this, and that's our trip here is basically to do that, to come here to thank you all, and to obviously to meet Mr. James here, because we wouldn't have met otherwise, I don't think. I was familiar with Mr. Rogers, Senator Don Rogers, who successfully passed or shepherded in the 10th Amendment resolution. And we're on our way to, we wanted to meet with Ron Jackson to let him know that we're here, and we are ready and willing and able to accomplish this with his assistance and guidance and the commanders and the creator gods. I know that these things can be done, as Mr. Cleary had said, Ed Young said, that when you hold this vision before yourself and you say it will be so, and it's meant, and it's a righteous work, not meaning self-righteous, I'm talking about righteous, and it needs to be put in place, and that's what this republic initially was about, was empowerment of the individual to experience and express their God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that I know that will happen. I know now through my experience with these people, Paul and my wife Melissa and all of the people connected with what we call the Phoenix Project Association in Honolulu, we know that these things will come to pass. So we have to be very careful what we're starting to think and do here. And our mission now is to collect information and make connections and ask for guidance from the commander. And so that's what we're here for. Doc?
Ron, would you also mention something about the Hawaiian sovereignty movement, too, and how that parallels the attempts of Ron Jackson to reunify this country?
Okay, thank you, Paul.
And may I ask for a vote? I believe that one of the best places that you could set up your parallel government is in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yes. Specifically Maui.
Oh, you like Maui.
Hawaii.
Well, you can work out the little details.
Yeah, we'll do that after the meeting. You know, the arrangements that are made in the spiritual world are so profound when you start to be allowed to see them and you acknowledge them. That's the most difficult thing, I think, for myself. But what Paul was mentioning is that about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we met with a gentleman, Kaleo Lindsay, who had worked with another gentleman that I've referred to Rick Martin about. His name is Mr. John Nelson out of Denver, who assisted Mr. Lindsay, who's Hawaiian, in repatriating the legal or de jure Kingdom of Hawaii. The Kingdom of Hawaii was a constitutional monarchy that was patterned after that of England and the United States, to my knowledge. I have not read that constitution, so I'm talking beyond my direct information, but this is what's been relayed to me. Mr. Lindsay worked with Mr. Nelson in repatriating the kingdom. It was illegally taken over in 1893 by the Dole pushed, or the Dole gang. Sanford Dole and 12 other men, linked, I believe, ultimately to the sugar interests, the big British interest cartel that was trying to, again, control the planet. And I also understand that Honolulu was also a drug-running conduit into the United States at that time. They took over the control of the kingdom and the queen yielded. And it says in a document, the Senate Resolution 19, that President William Clinton signed last year in November, I believe, that the Queen yielded an illegal takeover of a sovereign nation. A yielding is not surrendering, therefore it always exists, apparently, in international or the laws of nation. It's not dead. It's not an ended entity. It continues. And all he had to do was repatriate it, which he did by filing certain documents, apparently legally. So now we have, it's almost like I would imagine the phoenix growing out of the ashes of corruption. The sovereign kingdom of Hawaii growing out of the ashes of the corrupt state of Hawaii, if you will, or the corporation. And what it means is that people can now go back to living in that, at least if we all wake up to it, they can live under that constitution if they choose to,